Well, Luana, thank you for joining us again. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me, Mike. It's great to see you twice in a day.
I know. And for the listeners, we had a Men's Journal Power Hour Live, which Luana joined us. Dr. Luana Marquez, Bold Moves. How's the book doing?
I think the book is doing fantastic. I'm getting lots of messages of people finding their way to overcome avoidance and live a bold life. So it's been fantastic to see.
Well, you know, I want to jump right in because, and I found this, and I'm going to read this to you. When compared to psychoactive medications, review studies found CBT alone to be as effective for treating less severe forms of depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, tics, substance use disorders, eating disorders, and borderline personality disorders. So first off, CBT being cognitive behavioral therapy is as effective as diagnosing somebody and just peddling medication. Not to say that there isn't a place for great medications, but that was in my research, I thought that was profound.
It really is. I mean, we've known this since the mid-90s when we've done studies showing people's brain before and after medication and before and after cognitive behavior therapy. And what we see is that we change the same pathways in the brain. And so, you know, we can actually alter our brain by doing cognitive behavior therapy. It's you know, sit-ups for the brain.
As I like to say, mental fitness. Let's actually, for the audience, because again, CBT is not a widely known practice. Could you give us sort of the layman definition of cognitive behavioral therapy?
Sure. It's a type of therapy that's skill-oriented, and it's really designed to help you understand how what you say to yourself, your thoughts, affect how you feel, your emotions, which affect what you do. So for example, if you wake up and you're feeling particularly anxious because you have a meeting with your boss, and then anxiety gets your brain spinning, you're like, my boss is going to be mad at me, I haven't performed well, I'm not doing as good. That increases your anxiety and that tends to lead to avoidance. CBT basically pauses the brain, teaches us to pause and to change the narrative, how we're talking to ourselves and our behavior, what we're doing so that we're not paralyzed by stress and anxiety. And so think about this, and I wasn't joking in terms of sort of, I love your word, mental strength, is really training your brain to function different in moments of stress and anxiety.
So anxiety, I'm assuming, much like mental health, has been on a societal uptrend. Would that be accurate?
That's very accurate. Before the pandemic, the CDC was reporting about 20% of people in the U.S. were having clinical levels of anxiety. Right now, it's between 30 and 40%.
Ooh, so within a short few years, we saw a massive uptick.
A massive, and it's not coming down naturally, which we would have expected, but I think people are still struggling to figure out what to do with that anxiety.
This is probably such an open-ended question. In your opinion, what are the root causes of anxiety?
So, Mike, I don't think anxiety is a problem at all. I think the problem is what we do when we're anxious, right? We're all going to have some level of anxiety and distress, you know, and we're biologically wired to have some discomfort. And so I think the problem is not anxiety, is that we have not learned to deal with anxiety. So instead, we engage in what I call psychological avoidance. We avoid anything that makes us anxious, which makes us feel more anxious. And so I think anxiety is just a fever. We are just running away from the real infection.
I love how you totally turned that around on me, because when you think about it, fear, it's like saying, well, you shouldn't have fear. No, there is no courage in the absence of fear. Fear is a fundamental building block of people demonstrating courage. Well, let me ask you this. Why do you think anxiety, and it might have been because, you know, psychiatry has evolved over the last, the last couple decades, generation. Why did people have less anxiety or suffer less from anxiety, let's say, you know, in the 60s, the 40s, the 30s?
So I think there are a couple factors there. One of the things that I think is a chronic contributor to people reporting more anxiety and not knowing how to manage mm-hmm. is the lack of social support and community, right? One of the strongest buffers against anti-mental illness is a close-knit network that supports you. And we live far away from our families. We don't have close friends. And so there's this inherent change in society that's leading to more sense of anxiety. Two, we live much faster paced through life where we believe that we can do more faster. And there's this belief that like if you're slowing down or if you're creating space for your brain, that you're not good enough. And so we are trained to multitask and function faster. That leads to anxiety. And then our own habits are contributing for it. Yeah. You know, well, people are not eating well, they're not sleeping enough, they're not exercising. And so I think those are factors. I think the other just modern life leads to more anxiety. It's just a fact. Again, I'm going to keep saying the same thing, but I think just because we are reporting more anxiety doesn't mean that's the problem. The problem is we just lost the ability to handle some of this.
So, you know, as I'm listening, and I know you're a parent as well, I'm sort of hearing like exposing your children to, let's say, difficult or situations of conflict in a risk mitigated way sort of assists with their development as long as you're coaching and mentoring them to process through that conflict or that difficulty in a healthy and a healthy, you know, healthy and an appropriate response. Is that accurate?
100%, Mike. I think one of the disservice that parents do right nowadays is they step in to minimize any conflict. I see this in the playground. Two kids start to just disagree and the parents like, don't behave that way. And my stance is, listen, I'm going to watch for a second. I'm going to see it's going to develop. I'm not going to let my kid hit another kid, but I want to see if he can actually handle the kid being upset. Can he handle the kid walking away? Can we teach that sometimes people don't agree with you? And we need to let kids experience discomfort because it's the only way to understand it's not bad. And I think we do a huge disservice if we don't let kids do that.
You know, as I'm thinking back to my profession, military special operations, I mean, we tried to expose our, you know, I'm just going to use the term soldiers, to as much adversity and training in the United States, trying to replicate as close as we could to get actual wartime conditions in order to, and I use the word condition them to respond appropriately or effectively come a worst case scenario, let's say in Iraq or Afghanistan.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Because what you're training your soldiers is really this idea that if it hits, can you respond in a way? And I think for military, there's another piece, which is you have to desensitize a little bit and not have that fight or flight kick in as fast in a situation of real, real threat. Right? For our kids, it's slightly different because they're perceiving threat. But the brain, it's sort of stupid. It doesn't separate the real war zone for perception of threat at the lower level. And so it's the same approach for the kids. It's like, let's face discomfort. Let's stay with it so that your brain doesn't fire when a kid is just upset with you.
Does it almost build like this mental scar tissue in a way, like this resiliency? Because it seems like society, let me say this, it seems like our society is less resilient these days.
I definitely think we have less ability to handle the curveballs of life for sure. And we call it that resilience, right? But I think in many ways, what we're training is to be able to prune our neurons in such a way that we can go towards adversity. You know, I've shared this with you before when we talked, and I share this a lot, is I grew up with a lot of adversity, but I used it as a way to transform anxiety into power and to go towards the things I want. And I wasn't going to let anxiety get in the way. And it's not that I don't feel anxiety. It's just that I don't let it paralyze me.
To what degree, if any, does, because you talked about the scenario when somebody wakes up, they know they have a meeting with their boss. The anxiety starts to kick in. They're starting to run through all these scenarios in their head that haven't happened yet. To what degree is maybe self-love a part of CBT? Because I've seen a lot of people that do struggle with anxiety is they're always like self-deprecating. There's no belief in themselves. Is that part of CBT or is that not something you really engage in?
So all of us have this view of the world. Think about this lenses that we wear. Mm. And psychologists call this core belief, right? Some of us have a belief that I'm capable or that I'm smart. Some people end up walking around with beliefs like I'm unlovable. And to the extent that those beliefs then predict what you say to yourself and how you engage, CBT is going to address it. Because if you say to yourself you're unlovable, then there's no way that you're going to act in such a way that brings that sense of belonging and feel loved in the world.
So one of the things I read, and I think one of the biggest held beliefs about psychiatry is the from the movies, there's Dr. Luana Marquez, you know, sitting in her chair. I'm on the couch. I'm just talking. You're responding. But CBT, is it safe to say, is almost like an action-oriented problem-solving approach, a critical thinking approach to, again, these symptoms of anxiety, stress, PTSD?
So there's going to be no couching with anybody laying if you're doing CBT. What you're going to have is a piece of paper, a pen, and you're going to be in a school for your brain, and you're going to be learning. You should never walk out of a CBT session, Mike, without homework, without something to practice, without understanding why you're practicing it. So it's really a CBT therapist's job should be to work themselves out of a job so they can train their patients to become their own therapists. That's what CBT is about.
So I've got to assume, like, when you are dealing with, like, let's say a 30-year-old male who's suffering from anxiety, again, he's a product of his environment, a product of the habits, either good or bad, that he's formed up to that point. Do you start with small things? Like, do you try to integrate small things and then build from that?
So I fully believe in what, you know, I call small early wins. So if that 30-year-old male is stuck because he can't deal with conflict, imagine his marriage, right? That's the biggest conflict. Are there domains that he can deal with conflict? Could he at least deal with a little conflict with his mother? Maybe equally as difficult. Maybe with his bodies, right? But we do want to start small. Because we, again, CBT is about training the brain to not have that fight or flight. And if you go all or nothing, that 30-year-old male is going to just crumble. And that's not the point here.
As you're talking, it just seems like this, like CBT. And again, you know, again, problem solving is a form of critical thinking. Mm-hmm. It should not only be in lower education, high school, it should be in higher education, given sort of, you know, I automatically think of safe spaces in higher education, which I got to say, I disagree with. I understand if somebody's stressed, I'd rather, like, let's have a conversation about this and come to some sort of resolution than you just sort of go into seclusion within your safe space. Why aren't we teaching this within the education system to make, and again, I don't know if this is the right word, more mentally tough or mentally prepared adults?
You know, I've been trying to do this for a while. I did an internship for inner city youth a couple of years ago, Mike. And one of this girl was in high school. She was a sophomore. And she says to me, they teach me about sex ed, but they don't teach me how to regulate my emotions. How do they expect me to not have sex if I don't even know how to regulate my emotions? And I was like, that's a good point, right? Like, that's the reality. And so your point, we need to be teaching everybody about their brain, how to regulate emotions, how to approach fear, handle conflict, and think critically. And those to me are not optionals. The same way it's not optional to take care of your physical body. And yet somehow we live in a society that people separated the brain from the body, and it's not the thing we do.
No, I always like to say the physiological and psychological performance is what I'm always focused on. Again, hence mental fitness, spiritual fitness, yes. Physical fitness. They're all tweaked. Where does CBT go from here? I mean, again, I didn't look at the adoption rate. And quite honestly, Luana, I'd never heard of CBT until we connected. That's how little I knew about it.
Yeah. So I think there are a couple of things we need to do, Mike. And I'm so glad you said that, because that's the deal. Most people never heard of it. And so they seek therapy if they're brave enough or have the support to. And then they get a talk therapist. They don't get better. And then they think therapy doesn't work for them. Right. I'm going to make a horrible analogy, but it's like trying to get fit to run a marathon and get a coach that is morbidly obese that never ran in their life. It's just, they're not going to be able to train you. And so to answer your question, a couple of things we need to do. One is we need to train as many people as possible to be able to deliver CBT as skills, not therapy. We should be teaching this before people are ill, right? The same way we had campaigns about washing our hands, we should have campaigns about what does it look like to have mental strength, to use your term. I think the second point is we need to get as many places, and that's my personal mission in the world, is to make CBT go viral. How do we get in podcasts like yours that talk to men who probably never, ever thought about, you know what, there's a type of therapy that could work for me because it teaches me mental strength, not just sit and lay on a couch. And to do that, we have to get it on the media. We need to be able to get in as many places as possible so that it's not just for a few.
You know, EQ, emotional intelligence, you know, again, that no one really spoke about EQ until about 10 years ago. And that's come to the forefront as well. In terms of CBT, I've got to assume you know, that is a great methodology to increase emotional intelligence as well.
100%. Because it's teaching you the basic ability of emotion regulation, which you need to have emotional intelligence.
What do you hope for bold moves? And again, if somebody's listening, what would you say to them? Why should they pick up Bold Moves? And what did you ultimately intend for the readers to gain out of it?
So I wrote Bold Move because the skills there are the skills that got me out of poverty and out of adversity into Harvard. And they're the skills that I've worked with CEOs of Fortune 100 company and with young people coming out of prison. But no one had heard of CBT like you, Mike. So I wrote Bold Move first to get CBT into the conversation, but most importantly, to debunk this idea that anxiety is the problem. The problem is not anxiety, it's what we do when we are anxious. And if what we do is engage in avoidance, then we're gonna continue to be stuck as a society. So I wanted to teach people skills. And my mission with Bold Move is to get everyone in the world to learn the skills and change their lives. Why do people have to suffer if they could just have a better life?
You're gonna get no disagreement from me. However, you know, again, most people follow the path of least resistance, let's say there. So if there is, you know, Adderall or something that I can take that is a quick fix, literally 1 second to pop in my mouth versus putting in hour after hour, to learn the skills that come along with, cognitive behavioral therapy, they're going to opt for the path of least resistance. But I mean, how often do you talk about like foundational habits, and what is the longevity of results of CBT versus, you know, your, again, psychoactive medication route?
So let me put it this way. If you're taking Adderall, it's working for you and it's actually making your life better and it has no negative consequences, be my guest. But what I hear from people, it's not that. What I hear is I'm taking this medication and, you know, psychotropic drugs take the bottom out. They're like, and for some people is necessary. They're suicidal. They are so anxious that they are paralyzed in their house. For those people, they need something to literally stabilize them, right? Mm-hmm. From that, what we know is to really live your best life, CBT gives you skills. And those are skills that if you practice, they will continue to work for the rest of your life. But you have to practice. Right? The same way that if you lose 50 pounds by going to the gym and exercising, and then you give it up and you just eat pizza, guess what? You're going to put the weight back on. It's the same thing with CBT. So you're right. CBT is a lot of work. It takes time. But the same way that having a physical health takes time, emotional health, mental strength takes time.
It is so worth it. And again, you know, I use the analogy of the blue pill, the red pill. The red pill will give you instantaneous physical results, 8% body fat for a male, but you'll lose it as quickly as you gained it because you didn't build those building blocks. You know, I'll say for any medication I've ever been given, there's always like a diminishing return. It works great at first. I'm sure Adderall, I've never taken Adderall. I'm sure it works great for so long, and then you start to get diminishing returns where you've got you can't take one anymore. You've got to take two pill, whatever the milligram dosage is. Where CBT is a long term foundational solution, man, and I will always opt for that, and I'm not afraid to put the work in. How much? Let's say for an average patient, they come in, they work with you. How much time are you asking them to work on the skills you teach them each day? Is it 5, 10 minutes? Are you trying to get them through to go through an exercise?
So on average, CBT therapists will ask you to put it at a minimum of 45 minutes a week, at a minimum. Mm-hmm. What I say is what you put in is what you get out of it. And I would suggest that you put in, you know, I prefer smaller dosages often. So I'll say to a patient, if they're trying to change the way they're thinking, can you give me 5 minutes every morning? Can you give me 5 minutes every night? But it's really about how fast you want to get better. And, you know, I don't have control over that. The person that's doing the work has control over that. We'll set up for early wins and then we'll push harder once you build some strength. But you know, once people start to get momentum, what I see, Mike, is they go, wow, this shit is working. And so, like, I want a little more of this.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's so hard with regards to fitness. Somebody wants to lose weight. And, like, you really don't see results until, like, I don't know what it is. It's like 30 is the magic number, day 30. But at day 25, somebody's like, just they're disgruntled. They're defeated in a sense. They're like, I'm seeing no results. You just got to stick with it. Eventually, you will. Well, I mean, Luana, this makes absolute sense to me. Is there any particular story that you love to tell that you utilized in Bold Move to get somebody to make that final purchase?
So I think the story I tell often is how at 15, I moved in from a small town to a big town to live with my grandmother. And I'm going to tell you, Mike, I was terrified of strangers. I just decided they're going to make fun of me. I'm from a small town, from a single mother. And I started to avoid people altogether. And my grandmother noticed this. And one day she invited me to go to the mall to eat Chinese food. I had never had Chinese food. As I said, I grew up poor. And I remember looking at this food, smelling it. And she's like, let's go talk to that older gentleman over there. I was like, what? Talk to strangers? You can't make me do that. And she didn't take no to an answer. She just pushed me out of my comfort zone and did it again and again and again. And that to me is when I first started to understand that I could have a different life, that if I approached, things would be different. It wasn't until I got to graduate school 15 years later that I was like, oh, there's science behind this. But I share that story for two reasons. One, a lot of this wisdom, our grandparents could have had it. Our parents have it. And so it doesn't have to be a therapist to teach you to approach and not avoid. And my whole life changed because of that. Right? Had I not had that, I might have been stuck in Brazil still. And so for anybody listening to us today, right, make your bold move today. Because if you do, it doesn't have to be a big, bold move. But every step towards that life that you want is how we get there.
Incremental exposure. That like we're not, I mean, Bold Moves is not asking you to jump into the deep end. It's asking you to take incremental, exposure to what I say risk, what you view as risky and which, you know, different strokes for different folks. But no, Luana, every time we have you on, we could go for hours. This is, absolutely fascinating. I would implore, you know, the listeners to just go to Amazon, which I'm assuming is the best place to find the book. That's where you want them to go to Amazon, check it out, especially, you know, from that internal thought process in what we go through. And we just recently had Greg Harden on, who coached, you know, people like Tom Brady, Michael Phelps. And he talks a lot about what you preach. It's also self-love. Is nothing's bad. You're an amazing human being. If you choose to be, love yourself, process what you're going through, decide you are in control of all your faculties and agencies, and you do control the majority of outcomes in your life on how you, based on how you respond, not react. Luana, thank you for joining us again. I'm looking forward to writing this article and getting it out. I think it will help. Your book will help a lot of people.
Thank you so much, Mike. It's wonderful to be with you. And it's great to see you making your bold moves all the time. So thanks.
Hey, likewise. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. Adder.
Pleasure.